Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and Tony Evans of the Evening Standard. Do not adjust your sets. This is an England team with youth, freshness, intelligence, and intensity. They're well coached, a huge threat at set pieces. They're also really likeable. Bizarre. Okay, so the opposition hasn't been great, and it's not quite the time for football's coming home and all that, but we might know more after the Belgium match. Do we dare to dream?
It's coming home, isn't it? I agree with your sentiments there. Very exciting England side. So far, so good. Opposition. I think we have to put those two victories into context. Not the strongest opponents, Tunisia and Panama. But there's a lot to like about this England side. I love the pace going forward. The tempo of the football has been terrific. There's no fear from the players. And that's the one thing England teams have played with better. More talented England teams have played with fear at major tournaments. This lot aren't. And yeah, there's a lot to be enthusiastic about. I still have slight reservations about us at the very highest level defensively. But we will score goals in this tournament, and I think we can go deep into it.
It's almost the time to enjoy the moment, isn't it, Tony? But let's put that to one side and look at this rationally, if that's possible. What do you think the natural limits of this team are in this World Cup?
Well, I've been saying it for months and months. That I reckon I'd take this lot to the semi-finals. I think there's a great opportunity. I think where England have got is loads of pace, you know, as Adrian's just said, and they've got goal scorers. The defending is sometimes shambolic and they will get caught up by the better sides. But looking at the tournament, I don't think there are many great sides in it. And I think Belgium are one of the better teams. And obviously, they've seen them in the group. I think there's loads of potential for this team. And they've got something that everyone else wants, a real top-class goal scorer.
They've also got a coaching team, and I use that word, that's almost growing into the tournament in the way that, you know, the players are.
Yes.
You look at the free kicks, you look at especially that fourth goal that England scored against Panama. That's the sign of something going on at a training ground.
Yeah, it was great innovation, wasn't it? It was a really well-worked free kick, beautifully constructed. And Steve Holland's probably the man that takes credit for that. I know he's very well known for his hard work on the training ground. Bright football in mind. And I think it's a really good combination, actually, between Southgate and Holland. I'm not completely sold on Southgate's tactical credentials. He's clearly a smart guy. I think his main quality so far, his most successful aspect of his management, is the club mentality that he's forged within the group. Really, really important at international level. We saw it with Wales. He's done that with the England camp. He's got them playing with confidence and freedom. I think he's going to have to lean on Steve Holland for a little bit of tactical nous in game. I'm still not sold on how bright, how dynamic Southgate is in game to make the changes that are required. We'll find out over the coming games against better quality oppositions. But as a combination, I like it. Southgate and Holland got sensible backroom staff. They all seem to be getting on great. Yeah, there's a lot to like.
And Southgate's handling, you know, the public facing stuff really well. Now, you know, we've been with England teams and it's just been a circus. He's actually handling all that really well. And I suppose that gives us an insight into how he actually deals with the human stuff going on with his squad.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a very, very good communicator. He's very direct. He won't complicate things. He won't mess with the minds. He'll keep it simple for them. And he's got a very outgoing attitude towards the way they operate. I mean, we've seen some of these England camps. I mean, in 2010, it was like a prison camp. The players couldn't get out. They, you know, sort of, you know, they were all fighting with each other internally. And there's none of that in this group. And I think I do share Adrian's reservations about him tactically. I don't think that's where his strength are. But what I mean, I wonder whether he'll need to do too much tactically in this tournament, except keep them playing at the tempo that caused problems for the opposition. Make sure they don't let the game slow down to suit, you know, whoever they're playing, and, you know, and keep the sense of togetherness and confidence going.
Yeah, from a tactical perspective, my fear in the tougher tests is that we won't have enough of the ball. Now, I think we're a fine counter-attacking side because of the pace we've got. So it might not matter wholly, but I do worry against a Spain or a Brazil, whether we've got enough in central midfield with Henderson. And you've got this Ali Lingard axis or Lingard Loftus-Cheek, as it was last time out. It's exciting, it's dynamic, it's great for getting players into the box, but sometimes you wonder whether we'll be passed around in those central areas. And at times, Panama and Tunisia did scythe through the midfield quite easily. And once teams get at our back three, I am slightly nervous because I think Harry Maguire's a little bit slow on the turn. I think we can all see that. And Kyle Walker is not a natural centre-half. I still have reservations about that choice, even though Trippier is having a fine World Cup. His deliveries have been outstanding. But if I'm Kyle Walker, I'm gutted because I think it should be him. And I think he's our best attacking right wing back. And I feel a bit sorry for him because he's playing in a position where he's not natural.
Do you think, you know, against tougher opposition, he put Dier in and then he'd switch Walker out wide?
I don't think Trippier's going anywhere. I think Trippier's nailed on now.
Because, the quality of his delivery is such that you can't do without that, can you?
I think that's how Gareth Southgate would see it. And let's be fair, if you're Trippier, you can't do much better than he has in the first couple of games. So he can't be dropped, which puts Kyle Walker in a difficult position. It's unfortunate. He's got that pace, and I understand why down the sides on the counter-attack he's a good safety net for England. But as we saw with that penalty concession in the first game, certain scenarios he's not wholly familiar with. He doesn't defend like a natural centre-half, and that might be an issue against good teams. And I'm especially thinking of you, Eden Hazard's and your Neymar's moving forward. They were playing a team that were conference standard at best. So we have to put it into perspective. Panama were rubbish. So I think I predicted 4-0 ahead of kickoff, and I would have been disappointed if we hadn't won by a 4-goal margin. So I'm not getting too excited. I do agree, actually, with Tony on that. And the fact that we only have the one superstar this time around, I think, is helping because they are all in it together, sacrificing themselves for the team in certain ways without fuss.
But and that group of players is a non-superstar superstar.
Yeah, Kane is brilliant, isn't he? I mean, you've got to love Harry Kane. Yeah. Sir Harry, it'll soon be, won't it? He's a sensational centre-forward. He's absolutely outstanding in every respect. And I even like what he's doing off of the pitch as well. I think that he's carrying himself well. The tone he's setting in his interviews is exuding confidence, but not going overboard. Keeping his feet on the ground. He's the boy next door, isn't he? He's a real hero. And even though they're penalties against Panama. What penalty? Just the confidence that he struck them. I don't think there's a better centre forward around. And I did say, you know, I'm not just getting overexcited. I said last year, I don't see a better all-round number nine in the world than Harry Kane.
And the thing is, you know, you say it's only Panama and it's only penalties. It's England and penalties.
Yeah, yeah. Daniel Levy, he's done it again, hasn't he? He's made him sign a new contract just before the World Cup. Kane's price will be through the roof if he wins the Golden Boot.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's a great bit of business. I mean, there's a certain amount of luck in there as well because, you know, everyone's acting like proud fathers at Tottenham. You know, with Harry Kane, how many times did they try and give him away? They sent him out on loan everywhere. I mean, you know, they actually at one stage called his dad in to tell him they were going to cut him loose. And then, because he hadn't sort of developed and grown, it's a bit chubby and he was shorter than they wanted. And he looked at his dad was used and a great physical specimen, thought, you know what, we'll give him another chance. So, I mean, there's a lot of luck gone into it. But, you know what, no one rides the luck like Daniel Levy.
No, he had to do it. It was a very sensible piece of business. Everybody was a winner. You knew that when news broke that he'd signed the deal. And it doesn't mean for a second that he's going to remain at Spurs forever. Yeah, that is for sure.
And the other problem for Levy is everyone else in the squad will be going, hang on a second, looking at the wages. Oh, yeah. They won't expect Harry Kane money, but they'll expect more than they're getting.
But he's playing so well that you do wonder that Barcelona and Real Madrid will be duty-bound to come in from at some point, and they're the ones that have got the money to surprise him away.
Yeah, yeah. And, with Griezmann not going to Barcelona, which I think they thought they'd got him. Mm. OK, different type of player, but...
Yeah, look, one day Harry Kane, I'm pretty sure, will be playing for probably Real Madrid, but one of those two giants. I can't see how that won't happen. In a way, I do love the notion of a one-club man, of someone that will stick with and become a complete Tottenham legend for his entire career. But I don't think Harry Kane needs to stay at Spurs his entire career to be a legend there. He's on his way to it already. He just needs to inspire them to silverware.
And I think, the next season's crucial for how long he stays there. I think they need to win something because he's not quite getting the going rate for how good he is in terms of wages. But he's heading into that vicinity. And so the other thing that keeps your clubs is winning trophies.
Right. I'm going to try and intersperse the show with some questions from the listeners and the viewers. One from Paul Fry. There was so much talk about Dele and his link with Kane. Mm. But is Lingard England's joker in the pack?
Well, so far he has. His finishing was poor, wasn't it, in the first game? But the positions he took up were exciting. He is dynamic. I've never been a huge fan of Jesse Lingard. I've loved his enthusiasm. His work rate is terrific. And he causes chaos. I love that about him. But I've always thought, has he got that quality, that wherewithal to finish off the chances?
The coolness under pressure.
Yeah, but... I mean, that goal against Panama was terrific technique. And he has scored a few goals. He's come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. Is he the joker in the pack? He might be. He might be. But I would have Loftus-Cheek in my team no matter what. I just think I like his assurance on the ball. I love his strength. And I think with just Henderson there, you need someone else of stature that can help control the game, which does mean that ultimately Ali and Lingard probably are in competition with each other for a place. Now, Ali is a better finisher, but is Lingard going to cause more problems to opposition defenders?
And it's a personal momentum thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's in it. Ali, it looks like he's not going to play against Belgium, still going to be injured. Got a great chance now, Lingard.
Yeah, I mean, so Ali is clearly the bigger talent. But I think in the last season, I think Ali's momentum stalled a little bit, in part because the way he was playing too far forwards. I mean, he was almost like a second striker for Tottenham. And there was a little bit of, Pochettino and Ali need to decide where he's going to be. Is he going to be a so-so second striker or a top-class up-and-down midfielder? In the tournament like this, where he didn't play in that up and down midfield role last season, he's a bit more predictable than Lingard and easier to block off his runs.
And thinking about that link up between Ali and Kane, which is proven, they do work very well together. Looking at Sterling's position in the side, far from guaranteed. I personally would like to see Rashford there, but an argument you could have Ali as a partner of sorts in that position, because it's not as if Sterling has been playing as a real centre forward. He's roving around here and there. I think Dele Alli might be looking at that position, especially in some of the big games, and thinking, hang on, what about my link up with Harry? I could be the man to deliver alongside him. I mean, it's something to consider.
Mm. What do you think of the Sterling situation, Tony? He's had a horrendous month through no fault of his own. In terms of being pilloried by certain sections of the media. He played by his own admission, poorly. in certainly the first game, and there were signs of almost desperation coming so deep to try and get the ball against Panama. You're Southgate, do you pick him?
I think I would, certainly for this last group game, weather through and give him another chance, because part of me thinks that the key to England going a long way in this tournament is to get him firing, because he terrifies defenders. You know, especially if he's playing in the middle of the pitch where they don't know which way he's going to go. I mean, he advances up. I was talking to someone who played against him, and he said the problem is, he said, he comes towards you, and as he gets near, he puts his hands up like that. He said, doesn't do the normal tells that give away, dipping his shoulders. The hands go up and you get confused. You don't know which way he's going to go.
Is he more terrifying than Marcus Rashford, though?
I think Rashford's pace is will scare people. Mm. But, you know, Rashford will run in behind. What Sterling does is draw defenders. Mm. So he'll draw a second man if he gets past the first man. And I think that opens up space for other people. It's a great problem to have, though, for a scout game.
Yeah, I'd love to have seen Rashford and Kane used together more in the build-up to the tournament, because you think about it on paper, you think, oh, that could work brilliantly. But we don't know, do we? And Gareth Southgate doesn't know either. So I personally would go against you on that one. I'd probably say that Rashford's worth a try, because it hasn't really clicked for Sterling. You think, right, give Rashford a go. He might bag himself a couple of goals, and then he's got the momentum going into the other game. So it's a difficult choice. But Rashford will score more goals than Sterling, wouldn't he? Over the course of a tournament. Mm.
But he won't create as much space.
No.
Jordan Henderson, you've mentioned that maybe he does need a bit more support against better opposition.
Yeah.
What struck me about him was that he's almost like the surrogate captain.
Mm.
You know, even late on in that Panama game, he was driving them forward. He obviously wanted more goals. Good character. And does that play into a broader idea that good teams need to be what they call, what the jargon is, leaderful teams? Mm. Like it was something that Clive Woodward picked up at rugby. Mm. He nicked it from Australian hockey. Mm. In other words, you need strong characters through the backbone of that team who can seize the initiative and almost act as captains at any moment.
Yeah, I think you do. And I think that's one of the problems that Southgate has with such a young team. There aren't many of them in the side. There's Harry Kane and there's Jordan Henderson. And the rest of them are a little bit callow, a little bit, you know, inexperienced. And even the experienced ones.
Stones is growing, I think. Do you not think? The dynamism, the aggression of his head. I'm not sold on Stones, but I do think he's got the potential. To be a young leader.
You know, when your back's against the wall, he's going to fall over the ball. I think he has got real potential to grow into it, but I think he's too uncertain about his own game at the moment. Mm. And there's a fair bit of that going on. So I think Henderson's a really important player for them, because he's... he doesn't distribute the ball as well as, you'd like a top-class midfielder who can play the ball around and, you know, Gerrard look up and see the movement in front of him, find a pass. Mm. He doesn't do that well, but he works really hard. He provides some momentum and thrust there, you know, in terms of getting them up the field, sort of leading them up the field rather than passing us up the field. So.
Yeah. I'll tell you who could be an important player in the knockout games, and they're all going to be knockout games effectively from here on in, is Fabian Delph, even though he played at left back last season, but he's not a glamorous player, but I do think he fits in better with the Southgate methodology. Mm. Do you not think? I mean, he's got great legs, hasn't he? A wonderful engine. And I think against the elite teams, his off-the-ball work is going to be really, really important.
Played really well just before, in those friendlies.
I thought he did. And it feels like Southgate's married to the 3-5-2, in which case, I don't think you can have Dyer and Henderson unless you put Henderson in a box-to-box role, which would be quite different from the position he's occupying now. I think Delph will feature. I'm sure of it.
It's all in that deep line midfield role. It's all a bit nuts and bolts, though, isn't it? Mm. You know, and which a team needs. Mm. But I think if you're going to, I think Henderson's the best equipped to play that role.
Mm. Yeah, Dyer just moves the ball too slowly, in my opinion. Just a little bit cumbersome.
Yeah, you mentioned knockout football, which is obviously, you know, the nitty gritty of any World Cup. England, let's face it, aren't great in that department.
Nope.
Six knockout wins since 1966. What is the essence of a good knockout team?
Oh, good question. A good knockout team. I think the ability to keep a clean sheet is very, very important. It's match play, isn't it? And it's that ability when things are not going your way in a game to not lose it. It's to just regroup and not collapse. And we've seen that at club level with various teams over the years. Jose Mourinho's teams have very done well in cup competitions because of that. So now I think that's a quality. And at the moment, we don't know because we've had easy qualification. Mm-hmm. Friendlies is very hard to tell because there's no real adversity. So the biggest test are to come. Is this team capable, a young team, are they capable when it's going badly of only conceding the one and then regrouping mid-game, changing their tactical approach a little bit to come back into it? Or when they take the lead, of seeing that game out and changing, maybe shoring things up towards the end. They're all unknowns at the moment, and that will be the test of the players and of Southgate's tactical credentials.
As we said earlier, we'll start to learn a little bit, you know, when Belgium come to town. A lot of people are saying, look, let's be smart here. Let's play for second place in a group. It's potentially easier on the progress through to the quarterfinals. I can't see why that works. If you're a professional football team or a sports team of any description, your job description is win.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're on a high, everyone's feeling good about it. Let's go out and lose. It doesn't work for me. And also, I mean, one of the things that history's taught us is sometimes what looks like the easy path turns out to be a very difficult one. And the best thing you can do in when you've got so few games is keep on winning. And that would be my point of view. And if, Martinez likes to think he invented football, and I'm sure he'll come up with a way of dealing with things in his way for Belgium. But if I was Southgate, I'd be saying, all right, let's go into the knockout stage, you know, with a win behind us, you know, having beaten Belgium. And then people will be sitting up and saying, oh, don't fancy England.
So we've heard this a trillion times, but it's take each match as it comes.
Well, it's a boring phrase, isn't it? I personally would give due consideration to finishing second. I would. Brazil, I would give it consideration. I don't think Southgate will at all. I completely agree that I think he will take Tony's mentality. But you do look at the path, the potential path, it would be much better. I think we've got a better chance of reaching the semi-final if we finish second.
But isn't the message of this tournament so far that the big teams, they're not as big as we think they are?
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel that avoiding Brazil is probably sensible. Even though they haven't been brilliant, I think Brazil have the look of a team that will grow into the tournament. And as potential quarterfinal opponents, if we're in the group, then that is where I think our race might be run, unfortunately, which would be a good effort, but not amazing. So not amazing considering the opposition in the last 16. So, yeah, watch this space. I would, if things are level, and keep your eye on this fair play and
lots whether, of dodgy buckets in the last.
Yeah, I think
minutes.
Kick the ball away. You know, just the odd shirt pull here and there. You never know. I don't think Southgate would do it, but it'd be fascinating if he did.
Could you imagine with the feel good factor in the country at the moment? They find a way of finishing seconds, and everyone goes, "Oh, great!" And they go to the knockout phase and get knocked out in the first. You know, the round of 16. And they come on to lynch mobs.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't know. Yeah, we won't know the last 16 opponents, will we, ahead of that game? So that's tricky because I think we would like to play Japan in the last 16, ideally. I wouldn't have any fears about Senegal, but Colombia is the one you probably want to avoid. I think that would be a really dangerous game for England, actually, in the last 16, Colombia. So we could finish top of the group or second in the group and face Colombia, and then it might be problematic.
Yeah. So in other words, just play your game.
I think so. I think it'll be a high-scoring game against
Do you think Martinez will follow through on his threat not to... Not
only if they're not fit. Only if they're if there are doubts.
Or Lukaku and Hazard.
If they're not right, it's definitely leave them out. In the same way that you have to leave Ali out if he's not right. I think that was the one mistake from Southgate in that first game. There were two gripes I had. One was, why did it take so long to recognise Ali's injury?
He was struggling from that.
It was obvious. And you should never listen to the player. Of course he didn't want to come off. I think he could have been more decisive there, Gareth Southgate. And the second one was over direct free kicks. I don't understand. Even though Trippier has been great and young over the wide free kicks and corners, they shouldn't be taking direct free kicks. I thought that was weird.
Yeah.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Agree yeah. completely.
Who should?
Kane.
Yeah.
Or Rashford if he's on the pitch.
The people who are likely to score.
So let's look at the potential sort of last 16. Let's go through it. Senegal. Okay, terrific draw with Japan. You look at the Japanese goalkeeper and you think, well, there's potential joy there. Does Senegal look the best African team out there at the moment?
Maybe, yeah. I'm just trying to think of the other African sides. I mean, Nigeria came good, didn't they? But they were horrible in the first game, came good in that second half. Musa, I don't know what Musa was playing out there. He looked like a very different player than what we see at Leicester. Probably they are the best African team. Very powerful, aren't they? Athletic. Not sure about their keeper, by the way. I think Senegal, we would create a lot of chances against Senegal. And I don't think there's a great deal of refinement about them. I'm confident that we would beat Senegal quite comfortably, actually. It's Colombia. It's the Cuadrado, Falcao, Quintero, James Rodriguez quartet. When they spring breaks on England, if we play them, that's where I think we could be in trouble. Senegal, Japan, fine.
Yeah, those goals against Poland were exceptional. The pass for the third goal was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, they link up so well, don't they? And the movement's fantastic. Mm. And, you look at James and given the, and Falcao, given the problems they've had, both of them have shown the class they've got. I think they would be, but I do think they will leak goals and England would score against them. Mm. So I wouldn't be so, I wouldn't be so negative playing them, I think. I'd still give it 60-40 England's way.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this England team should be making the quarterfinals. There's no, it'll be great if we get to the quarterfinals. No, they should get to the quarterfinals, and anything beyond that is a bonus.
Yeah, it's good to watch the, the Chelsea old boys proving their transfer policy right again, Cuadrado. Falcao, here's someone who basically nearly wrecked his career to try unsuccessfully to make the last World Cup. Mm. He got his reward, didn't he, with his goal?
Mm. Yeah, and it's you think before his injury, how good he was, and in the Premier League we didn't see the real Falcao at all. It was he was a shade of his former self, but he looks as if he's somewhere near his peak now, and it's brilliant to watch.
Yeah, he's got lovely movement, hasn't he? And on the stretch, he's capable of scoring great goals. It was horrible to watch, wasn't it, when he was at United? I mean, it was painful.
At United, wasn't he? He couldn't move.
He couldn't move.
You watch him now, and as you say, his movement's just.
But he's got the guys around him. He's got the sort of mazy dribbles of Cuadrado. Causes chaos. We talk about Lingard, and then Quintero and Rodriguez have got that slide rule pass in their armoury, haven't they? Mm. And I have to say that this England back three that. Yeah, I hope I'm proved wrong, but I just don't think they're quite up to it at that elite level.
Mm. Another question, James Pettit. Other than the obvious candidates, which team have you enjoyed watching at this World Cup?
Mexico, I think. Yeah, they've been great, haven't they? I mean, loads of pace, loads of excitement. Peru were fantastic. I thought even though they couldn't score, but they haven't scored so far. But
Mexico lively off the pitch as well. If you look at the stories around them, was it eight of them cavorting with ladies of supposed ill repute? All that stuff going on. You've got your captain under an American embargo.
Yes, yeah, it's all kicking off, isn't it? And Javier Hernandez has looked a good player again.
Doesn't look like a West Ham player.
Doesn't look like a West Ham player, no. I think Mexico probably the ones that stand out at the moment as the surprise package. Yeah, I just like the way they play. And I think on the counter-attack, they're as good as you get, really, on the break. So how far can that take them? We'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, they've looked good.
What about Croatia, Tony? I've been really impressed. The guys in the Last Chance Saloon, the sort of Modrics, they've got a feel about them that they could actually go a long way in this tournament.
Well, Modric mightn't be at the physical peak of his career, but in terms of knowledge, awareness and experience, I think he's playing as well as he's ever played. In the Champions League final, he was magnificent. He's been brilliant for Croatia. And yeah, they look to be a side you wouldn't want to meet. They're very, very dangerous.
Mm. Yeah, but that day and Lovren, don't they? So they're not going to win it. Yeah, Modric's been brilliant. Maybe the best central midfielder at the tournament so far. And they've got a bit of experience. Mandzukic as well. They've got a lump in there that can score big goals. Croatia, if it falls for them, could get to the quarters, maybe even the semi-finals. They've done it before.
Yeah, big players do it on the big occasion. I know that's a cliche, but like most cliches, there's a bit of truth to it. The Toni Kroos goal for Germany, had the same impact for me as the Ronaldo free kick against Spain. Someone, last chance, bang, produced. What impact will that escape have on Germany?
When it went in, I thought of some of the great Italy teams who started off so badly in 1982. Started off badly, crept out of the.
That's when I was at that tournament. That old. They started that tournament by spitting at their journalists. So if you're talking about PR, it didn't work well. But they were, by the end of the tournament, they were national heroes.
Yeah, they barely crept out of the group stage and then they went on to win it. A growth in confidence. I mean, I think that the Germans were so bad in the first game. I think everyone was stunned. I mean, I didn't think that they'd be as good as they were 4 years ago, because there's a centre that they've just gone slightly over the top. But, I thought they'd be better than they were. But that goal in the last minute, I mean, one, don't make the foul there. But secondly, where was the goalkeeper standing in a free kick like that? He's got a wall there. He took a step towards the near post. He was in the wrong position anyway. If he's another step or two, well, step and a half back, even if he takes a step towards the near post, he can palm it away. If he stands still, he can catch it. I mean, it was basically, where would you like to put the ball, Mr. Kroos? How about that corner? Outrageous!
You're being quite harsh. But I know where you're coming from. But it was a brilliant shot.
If I was a centre-half, yeah. The second I got back to the dressing room, someone would be getting a bit fixed.
But it was a sensational shot. It was an unbelievable moment. This World Cup has been a World Cup of great goals, hasn't it? Yeah. On Germany, where they differ from that Italian side is they can't defend. They've got no willingness to defend.
Boateng was just awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he just looks like an pale imitation of the former player, Boateng, that we knew from the last major tournament. With Kimmich, the way he flies forward and the fullbacks, I can't see them.
It was like watching Arsenal, especially when Ozil was playing.
It was a
fullbacks
little bit.
Overcommitting.
It was a little bit. I can't disagree with you. I think Germany have got... If they don't change their style of play, which they won't, Germany have got no chance. They're not going to win the World Cup.
Yeah, to add to that comparison, Tony, you've got a manager there. Has that manager stayed too long and almost outlived his brilliance?
Well, I think so, because, I mean, what we've seen successful in the last, couple of years is the pressing game and the high tempo game, and Germany don't press, and those midfielders they don't press, and then they don't track back when they lose the ball, and especially you've got two aging centre halves and you've got two wing backs who are who've forgotten to go back into their own half, and it adds up to a bad recipe.
There's a lot of teams, the best counter attacking teams, I think, will annihilate Germany. We saw Mexico do it, and if England were to play Germany tomorrow, I would put money on England to beat them and to score two or three goals, because they're defensively naive, which is really weird to say about Germany, but that is how they're playing.
Especially with the experience.
And in possession, a little bit pedestrian as well. Not exactly what you call sharp movement up top. They relied on the brilliance of Kroos for that equaliser. And they've got to improve massively to stand any chance of going all the way.
Now, we're all guilty of building up coaches and managers as the great wise ones. I looked at Sampaoli on the touchline in that catastrophe against Croatia. Here's a coach who was lauded with Chile, has 13 games with Argentina, 13 lineups, 59 players. But more than that, he just lost it completely, didn't he?
Really?
How can you play for someone like that?
Yeah, he exuded panic. When you exude panic, it's all over, really, isn't it? Those stats outline that he hasn't got a clue what his best team is, what his best tactical shape is, that he's having a stinker, isn't he? And I would sack him. I think now, just get rid.
The players try to, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. I think that there could have been no harm that comes in that. Clearly he's got pedigree, did well before Chile, but no, Argentina are a mess. So we talk about Germany being, you know, a shadow of their former selves. The Argentinian side are all over the gaff. And I think, I can't see them avoiding defeat against Nigeria based on their form so far. Especially with Moussa's speed up top. I think that he's tailor-made, actually, to rip them to shreds. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, down the side. If they play with three centre-halves again, and Moussa plays to the same level, I think Nigeria get two or three.
Yeah. What about the Messi situation, Tony? Here's someone, okay, 31 last Sunday. He got them to the World Cup. Let's not forget that. Mm. But he just looked completely forlorn, worn down by it all.
Well, I mean, he retired from international football, didn't he? Mm. After the last World Cup and then came back. And you know, you wonder whether coming back was the right decision. I mean, he's got a lot of miles on his clock, Messi. He's as brilliant as he is, and he always has been. And anyone who uses this tournament to doubt his greatness is like, was either born 20 minutes ago or was stupid. Yeah. You know, he's one of the all-time greats. Mm. But he can't do it on his own. Mm. And they're just not getting the ball into him in areas where he can hurt people. Yeah. And he's getting a lot of physical treatments from defences. And he's at that age where it's beginning to hurt.
Yeah, no, I think he played statistically going into the tournament. He was certainly in the top 10 of minutes played last season. So he
comes. He tailed off towards the end of Barcelona season, didn't he?
He's still, in my opinion, the best of all time. And I don't think it, whatever happens in this tournament will affect it. Because Chris is quite sad to watch that he's stressed out. He knows he'll take the brunt of it. But the bottom line is, he's a Ferrari, and the majority of his team are Skodas, aren't they, or worse. So what can you do? Mm.
Question from Parik Bharat. Of the three favourites, Brazil, Spain and Germany, well, we've talked about Germany, who has shown more promise to win it after two rounds?
Of all the favourites.
Basically, I think we're talking about Brazil or Spain, aren't we?
Yeah, I think Brazil, even though they haven't been sensational, have shown when they do come alive, you think, well, they can really rip teams apart. I think they've got the potential to really grow into the tournament. Spain, I would say, are probably the pick, actually, of the pre-tournament favourites. Their control of games, I think, will be really important. They've got so much nous in there, in central midfield as well. I think when push comes to shove, they will be able to dominate games at the high level. And they've got Costa up top, who's in good nick. Mm. So, yeah, right now, I would pick out Brazil and Spain as the most likely finalists. France, if that begins to click, if they become a team, they could blow anyone away. But, yeah, Brazil and Spain for me.
Spain are the only one of the pre-tournament favourites who are playing anywhere near the level they can. And they won't dip far from that. How much they can improve, I'm not entirely sure. I don't think there's not an awful lot of improvement in them. But they don't need to improve. You know, as Adrian said, they've got nous. They know how to win games. They know how to... They've got players who've been there before. They've got battlers. They've got a backbone of cynicism. They've got everything you want.
You, Adrian, talked about Brazil growing into the tournament. Any chance of Neymar growing up?
No, he's a horrible little thing, isn't he? You know,
can play.
Oh, he can play, but you know, he's one of these players whose talent is bigger than his impact so far in his career. You know, he was by far the supporting party in the Barcelona front three. You know, he was the weakest link there. He's gone to Paris Saint-Germain, and all he's the only trouble he's created is in the dressing room rather than opposing defences. And he's not I think they made really heavy work of in the last game, you know, sort of winning very late on, which and then, you know, his behaviour with the dive for the penalty, the way he's treated the referee, and then of course the throat cutting gesture. Look who you've beaten, son. Yeah. You know, you're not Maradona in 86 or Pelé.
You wait, quarter finals, he'll put us to the sword. You wait. I can understand where you're coming from, but he's got talent. But the issue is he fit? And I don't think he is, really. Mm. If he was fully fit, I think he could be one of the players of the tournament, but he isn't.
Yeah,
I think even fully fit, he's not yet at this stage in his career got the mentality of the highest.
I think he was good at the last World Cup. He was maybe better. He was pretty good at the last World Cup.
I think we sometimes underestimate just the pressure a Brazilian team is. You know, we all know about the shirt. You know, I had a shirt as a kid. I'm sure you did as well.
Yeah.
62 million people watched that Costa Rica game in Brazil.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in that context, what about the performances of Coutinho? There's someone who seems to me to be actually growing in stature.
Well, he's in the peak of his career, isn't he? This is his moment. And he's grabbed it with both hands. If Brazil go on to win the World Cup, there's every chance he could be the golden ball winner. He's that important to him. Really like him as a player. For what I think Chiche, the manager, needs to do is just look at the configuration of his attack, though. I do think this has almost been a World Cup of target men. I think the importance of that big guy up top, or someone to at least hold it up, has shone through. We've seen it with Russia, for France, for a number of the teams, for Spain. And I think Firmino, it might be the sort of secret link for them. You might have to sacrifice a Willian or something to get him in the team. But I think if Firmino plays and Jesus, and they find a way to get Coutinho and Neymar in there too, that could just press that button.
Firmino was brilliant at Liverpool, and you know, sort of every time he plays, he opens up space for the runners to come through. He did a brilliant impression of a target man against Costa Rica, didn't he, with the nod down?
Yeah.
And he's
like a reverse target man, though, isn't he? Yeah. He doesn't have to be that guy that pins the centre-back. But he would take someone with him.
His cleverness, his movements, it creates space for him and others. And I think Coutinho is more suited to La Liga and international football than he was the Premier League. Mm. As good as he was for Liverpool, I think he's going to be much better in those two environments.
I just think if Brazil just plonk a couple of holding midfield players, and they've got a few, maybe Casemiro, Fernandinho, Axis in there. I still don't really see the value of Paulinho. He's a good player, but and then unleash a front four that includes the front two that I talked about, Firmino and Jesus, with Coutinho and Neymar. If you can find a way for that to work, then Brazil have got a team.
Okay. Russia. That's a bit of a delicate one, Tony, so, you know, I'll come to you as a natural diplomat. ranked 70th coming in here. They've run an awful long way. They've scored a lot of goals. Churchishov, the coach, didn't want to answer any questions about relations.
Where's he going with this one?
To dope in. They deny any involvement, and we have to take that at face value. However, do you trust what you're seeing with Russia?
Not at all. Not for one moment. I mean, the one thing, well, we've learned over the years is don't trust Russia, don't trust FIFA, and don't trust the results of various tests until probably 6 or 7 years, maybe a decade later, when the technology's finally caught up with things. I mean, there's also the Putin factor. I'm sure it was suggested to them they'd all end up in Siberia, FC Siberia in the 17th division, if they didn't do better.
Well, the coach says it's hard work and motivation. And let's be honest, there are some players there who will go for big money after the World Cup.
Marginal gains.
Yeah, but performance enhancing substances, if that's what we're getting at here, don't put the ball in the net. They don't create a good tactical shape. They don't improve your decision making on the pitch. I understand the cynicism. We all do, I think, and can understand that viewpoint. But let's take it on face value. Really impressive. I think tactically they've nailed it, well, Russia. And the manager is, remember, he's gone to plan B straight away. He had Smolov up top, didn't he, for the first one. Okay, he had to change things. But he's seen something in Zuba. He's playing inspirationally. Golovin has been outstanding.
He'll go for a lot of money, I think. Yeah.
Big money. Cherisev, he's a pretty average player, but he's got a good left foot.
But also, let's be fair. You know, Group A wasn't that strong.
No.
The only people who call Group A the group of death is Amnesty International.
and the Uruguay game will be the true test. It's the first time they come up against a proper defence. Yeah. So we'll see.
World Cups, you know, throw up players, or there are players who just basically just turn up, like, hang on, James Rodriguez basically doesn't play in the 4 years between World Cups, it seems. Mm. What about Shaqiri? He's obviously going to move on in the summer. He suddenly turned up at the end of, you know, what was a fantastic game.
Oof, yeah.
Caused a political storm on the way out. Where's he going to end up, do you think?
Well, the strong talk of him going to Anfield, which wouldn't be a surprise. I think there'll be a lot more people interested in him now after his performance. He always has it in him. There was a feeling at Stoke that he only showed up for the big games. When Stoke were live on telly, when they were playing Man City or Man United, he'd score, he'd set up a goal, you know. When it was a 3 o'clock kickoff against West Brom, there was a bit, you know, I'd rather be anywhere else in the world. And he's got that component to his game, a lot of talent, a lot of pace. I wonder whether he is really a big game player. The sort of player that you make a mistake on when you buy them after a tournament.
Yeah, maybe. I like him. I think he's good. And his numbers were good last season for Stoke. Got good input. Whips a lovely ball into the box, doesn't he? I think Liverpool should absolutely go for him. When you think about the weakness of Liverpool in terms of their squad depth, he'd be their best substitute, wouldn't he? He wouldn't break into their first choice front three at the moment, but he'd be the best guy to come on and supplement that for the money that they were talking, which wasn't a great deal, was it, ahead of the tournament? It might have gone up now.
Oh, yes.
I think Liverpool and others should consider Shaqiri. I think he's got the potential to be an exceptional squad player for a big 16.
And I think at a bigger club, he performed more.
Yeah.
Time's running away as usual. Just two questions I want to ask before we go. The first is from Tony Mee. Is it possible to be happy, retain hope, and enjoy the tournament without going full on, football's coming home?
Yeah, I think it is. We just got to all chill out, haven't we? And just enjoy the ride. It'd be so good, wouldn't it? It'd be so good.
Anyway, take England out of it. If the World Cup doesn't make you happy, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Go watch rugby.
This World Cup is shaping up. It might all go boring in the knockout stage. It's shaping up to be the best I can remember. We should definitely be happy. But there's nothing wrong with thinking it's going to come home either, because it could. It really could. I don't think it will, but this England team are one of 7 or 8 that could.
And again, I've got to take issue with there. It doesn't become boring, it becomes tense.
Yeah, absolutely. So, final question. Golden Boot. Harry Kane, 5. Ronaldo, 4. Lukaku, 4. Cherishev, Diego Costa, 3. Who wins it?
Oh. I think one of Kane. I know it's an obvious thing to say at the moment, but I think England and Belgium might go quite far. I think they both get to the quarters. Maybe one will get to the semi. So I think Kane and Lukaku are great shouts. I think Portugal might, I'm not saying they will, but it's not a gimme they're going to go through. Iran might throw a spanner in the works. So I'm going to go for Harry. Yeah, Sir Harry. Sir Harry of Kane will win the Golden Boot.
I'm going to go for the tried and tested. I think Ronaldo is, may well be his World Cup swan song, and he's just got that mental toughness and the ability to do it on a big stage. Certainly in my lifetime, the best tournament or single game player I've ever seen.
Yeah. But Costa, don't write off Costa. I think Spain are going to go at least to the semi-finals, and he's their main goal scorer.
Yeah. And he's just... against Portugal, the way he bullied them. Oh, it was just a thing of beauty, wasn't it?
Well, a few years ago, I helped to present Harry Kane with Millwall's Young Player of the Year award. The Golden Boot would look great alongside that on the mantelpiece. Thanks for joining us here
on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.